Welcome to the Developer's Guide for Windows 10 Preview. I'm Jerry Nixon, developer evangelist here in the United States. I'm here with my colleague,
Andy Wigley, also developer evangelist working out of the UK.
We're going to talk about some of the features in Windows 10 that you get to play with. Specifically, we're going to talk about app services, one of the neatest things we've introduced for app developers to be able to leverage.
Absolutely, yeah. So we're going to look at what are they, what's the problem they solve, look at some of the scenarios, and then just a quick look at the key bits of the code that you need to put in your app services client and your server. A few little tips about how you debug these things, because it's not quite the same as you with a regular foreground app. And then we're going to dig a little bit into some of the kind of deeper aspects of thinking about how they work and some of the things you're going to want to worry about or think about when you're building these things.
Makes sense to me. Let's get started.
So, in summary, what are the app services? Well, it just allows a store application to provide services to other store applications,
quite
simply. There's nothing more complex about it than that.
We should stop
what
there.
What? Yeah, that's it.
Maybe we'll explain it more.
Let's explain it more, yeah. So when you look at the whole API set, UAP, the WinRT API set, there's a lot of strongly typed APIs in there which allow apps to interact with the platform. So you can, you know, there's the application model of contacts, there's email. So you can get at the user's contacts, you can send email and this sort of thing. And you can link to some of the built-in first-party apps with launch URI async. So you can launch the Maps app and this kind of stuff, or even launch into Bluetooth settings just by using the right URI. So it's all very flexible and all quite strongly typed and allows you to access those kind of built-in platform features and first-party apps.
Sometimes that's not enough.
That's not enough. So actually, third-party apps, these kind of apps that our developers are creating and enterprises are creating to run on these devices, they also want to have good ways of having apps to interact with each other. And we have a few ways of doing that, which is these app-to-app communications techniques using URI associations, where one app registers to handle a custom URI that you've devised, like mycoolapp:, that could be the URI scheme. And so one app could launch out a URI with using that URI kind of scheme, and the other app will be activated and can handle that the data that gets sent to it. Similarly, with launch file async, an app will register for a particular file extension type, and then the sender can just create a file of that particular file extension, launch it out there, and allow the shell to root that file to a receiving app, and the receiving app can process it.
I might have a file extension of .invoice, and so I'd have an application running that handles all the .invoice. Maybe it's my billing application that can accept those.
Yeah.
It's very specialized, but maybe in my enterprise, that's what we do.
Yeah. And in Windows 10, in UAP, both of those techniques, the launch URI async and launch file async, you can specify, this is a new feature, you can actually specify a specific app is only valid to receive that. So you can have a very directed app-to-app communication. Whereas before, it was kind of, well, have we got something? And or if you had more than one, the shell would just say, well, I don't know, which one do you want to handle it?
So now we can count on the app we're trying to launch is the actual app we're launching, not somebody else who's maybe hijacked that protocol.
Right. And there's a couple two new features that are really key in this that add a load of value in this space. The first is launch URI for results. Launch for results is allowing an app to launch another one, and the launched app takes over and presents its own UI to the user, does whatever it has to do. Maybe it's a payments processor or something like that, and then sends back a results package to the original caller, and the original caller finds out what the result was and then can carry on processing. So that's one foreground app talking to another. So the URI transfers from the caller to the receiver. Then the one we're going to talk about here is app services, where the calling app presents its own UI to the user, but then it can actually launch a UI-less, a headless bit of processing. What it actually does is launches the background task of another app. It can actually communicate with it, and they can handle communications between the two.
So this is terrific. A user can be using an app, never even know you're interacting with a background task.
Exactly.
And just get all the benefit for free.
Yep.
Nice. So we should think web services on a device.
That's a great way of thinking of it. Yeah, so the idea here is, just as if you're calling a web service out on the web, except these are app services on device.
Mm.
Yeah, so, but it kind of, we're not using HTTP to communicate with it. It's a message-based protocol, but the kind of interactions are essentially the same. Mm-hmm. It allows you to install, the user to install onto their device, an app that has an app service that the client apps can then make use of.
Beautiful.
Let's look at a couple of scenarios. Why? What kind of things might you want to do with this? Maybe a client app would just capture through the camera image of a barcode, so scanning a barcode. And then rather than every app having to find and install into it a barcode decoding library, maybe you just have an app service installed onto the device which has that capability. You just send the image over to it, it does the decoding for you, and you get the result, the data back.
That's a cool idea.
Another one, and this is a big ask for us, maybe you, particularly from our enterprises, you have a suite of apps. So the idea is that they, you have a line of business suite of apps that all handle aspects of a worker's working day. So you're like, a time card kind of an app, a scheduling app, a NFC kind of app, and all of these
beacons,
things.
Bluetooth beacons,
perhaps? Bluetooth beacons, yeah. Different things that all together, work together to help a user get through their working day. So they're collaborating apps, all these different things. And you can implement bits of the functionality that the worker needs to get through their day in different app services, and obviously maintain them separately and update them independently. It's a great way of creating an enterprise suite of collaboration apps.
Sounds like this could get pretty complicated. What's the syntax look like?
Well, there's the good news.
Ah.
We got a client B app. There we go. There's another app. There's two apps using this suite. There's this suite of background tasks. Yeah, what's the protocol? So this is a bare bones implementation. Actually, it's most of the implementation for a client. You see, I've just highlighted there, the client calls, it news up a app service connection object. And in that app service connection object, it specifies the app service name and the package family name, and then opens a connection to it. And once it's got that connection, we look at the status there. If it comes back with success, that means, yep, good, the service has been activated and we can talk to it. You might get other status back to say, oh, no, resources are short, or it's not available, or other things. But if you get success back, then you can start sending it stuff. So you use this value set, which is a new object that came out in 8.1, which is just basically a string object, object dictionary. And you can put stuff into it. What you put into it is entirely up to you. So this just, what you're doing is you're sending a package of data over to the service, and you send message async to do that. And if that status, if you get a success status back from that, so it's an awaitable, so you wait for the result to come back from the app service, the result comes back from your app service, and then you can carry on and do stuff with it.
I'm looking at this syntax. It feels a lot like the HTTP client. I mean, as far as conceptually, you can really see the pattern.
Yeah, but the value set, what do you send it? You can see there we're sending in our value set three things. We're sending a key called command, which happens to have a string called calc sum in it.
Ah.
We've got another key called value one, where we're sending an integer over, mm-hmm. and another one called value two, where we're sending another integer over. So you might surmise that perhaps our app service is a calculator example.
Yeah,
Is not particularly exciting from a processing point of view, but
simple
it illustrates.
To understand, yeah.
So what about the server? The service.
Yeah, it's got to receive it, right? Okay. That's the client.
So this is a background task. So it's a class. It's implemented just the same as any other background task. So it implements the iBackground task interface. And in it, we've got you have a run method just like every other background task.
Sure.
And there's a couple of things you want to do in there. First of all, we've highlighted there, get a service deferral, and you kind of save a reference to that, and you're going to keep that back. You can use that later on if you want to terminate yourself. Uh-huh. You might be instructed by the client to do that. And then, when you get activated the first time, you will be activated using this app service trigger, a special kind of trigger. So you get an app service connection object yourself, same as the client did, and you can hook up the request received event on that. So the first time you get activated, there will be an associated message and there will be a request to process.
Yeah.
But this is kind of the kind of bootstrapping logic. Thereafter, your app service just sits there and waits and can receive multiple messages.
Waiting for that event to fire, waiting for that handler to handle it.
So this is where this gets different from other background tasks, which tend to be very, very short-lived things. They fire up, they do something, they have all these quotas about the kind of wall clock that they're allowed to run in a particular thing. So these are quite different. These are sitting there in the background, could be dormant a lot of the time, waiting to be reactivated. And it's all through this request received event handler. Here we go. This is what one looks like. All this is a processor. This is a bit of code that you will implement to process the value set that you've been sent. And you just, this value set, our protocol for talking to this app service has that command keyed item in it. So we just have a switch statement on that saying, okay, we've got one command called do it. Actually, the example before was calc sum. I should have put that one on, really.
Yeah.
Case do it. And then we've also got a case quit. So that the quit one is where the client could send a quit command to the service, at which point the service will use that service deferral it saved before, call the complete method, and it effectively kills itself. You don't have to do that. You could just leave it there, the service, and let it kind of sit there waiting forever. Well, we'll come to the lifetime in a while. It's not quite forever, but for a long period waiting for additional messages. So the idea is you can set up a chatty exchange between the two. And you send a response back, of course, to the caller. Although, actually, you don't have to. Your client could just send a package over to the service. It could do something and not return anything. It's very much
fire and forget.
Could be a fire and forget, yeah.
So how do I want to declare this. I assume it's in my manifest.
Yeah, so like most background tasks, you have a foreground app and you have to have some code in there to register it for some kind of trigger. Not in this case. So an app that has an app service, all it needs to do is put in its package.apex manifest this extension, UAPCon extension, categories, windows.app service, specify the entry point.
Now that's the namespace and class.
Of the background task, okay. Yes, exactly that. You must give it a UAP app service, the app service name, which in this case we've called Microsoft DX-App Services Demo.
But I would call mine something unique to me.
Yeah, exactly, yes, so that's right. And that's it. It's now ready to go. It just needs to be deployed to the target and clients can start calling your Microsoft DX App Services Demo service.
Got it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's the entry point on the task and there's the name for the app service.
Gotcha.
So this, yeah, it's a very, very loose, two-way kind of chat channel. Like you said, client can send fire and forget. More usually, the client would send a package of data over and wait for some kind of response. But they can, it's kind of meant to be used as a kind of a chatty channel between the two.
And it is a processing channel. So there's no UI on the receiving side. So it's not like you're interacting with the UI of an app like you might for an authentication or something like that. And that's not what this is. Nope. This is really a processing using a background task to do the work in its security context. That may be the most important part of it.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, so that's the essential. Both client and the service can attach a request received event handler.
So. Now, I know how to hit F5 in my application and debug it.
Yeah.
But this sounds like two applications. One's a background task, one's a foreground from another app. How in the world?
Right. Well, this is anybody who's done any background task debugging will know about this, but I mention it now for those who are perhaps not familiar with this. So, yeah, the idea is you can set breakpoints in your foreground app, the client, and that's easy peasy. Everybody knows how to debug that.
Right.
But, yeah, this is like how you've got a separate project which has got a background task in it, and you want to set a breakpoint in that background service, the app service, and debug it. How do you do that? So there's two things about that, about debugging. First of all, what's the correct package family name? So the client has to specify that in a debug situation. And secondly, how you debug your app service. So the first one of them, how do you get the app service package family name? Well, obviously, if you've got a app service that's been submitted to the store, you'll have get your PFN, package family name, back when that app service is associated with the store. That's the normal way you'd get that back.
Yeah.
And you just publish that as part of the information you'll publish about your app service that will allow other apps to make use of its services. So you'll know what it is. In development, the first thing to say actually, sorry, in the tech preview is the store isn't open yet, so you can't actually do that and get the correct package family.
Right.
And of course, you're all dying to try this out. So actually what you can do programmatically, you can find out what the kind of temporary package family name is of your client just by calling package.current.id.familyname. And that will give you back the PFN that's been given. It's derived from the GUID of the project GUID, and then it adds a little bit on the end. So the idea is just, as you can see here on the slide, there's this code snippet here. You just want to put this in the foreground app of your app service. It might be the only thing in your foreground app, because an app service doesn't have to have a fully functional active foreground app. It's basically kind of just about the background task.
Ah, yeah.
But just put this in the foreground app, run it once, there you've got your package family name. Then you can plug this into your client, and away you go.
Okay.
Yeah, the other thing is, how do you set a breakpoint and debug these app services?
Yeah.
Like I said, people who've done background tasks will know how to do this. And you simply need to go into the project properties, go onto the debug settings, and there's this snappily named "Do not launch, but debug my code when it starts" option. You just check that, and then you actually F5 the foreground, your project that has got the background task in it. And it will deploy it, and it will kind of, Visual Studio will kind of look like it's going into a debug session, but then actually nothing then happens.
So you don't need a second instance of Visual Studio. You can use the same instance, just go into the properties of the, and make sure that you have multiple startup applications.
You could do that, yeah. Or just simply launch the foreground app just by, just start it from the start menu or something. Yeah. You need apps, or you can set up another instance of Visual Studio and debug the client app at the same time. But essentially, this is where you get an instance of Visual Studio that when the app service, the background task, gets activated, then, and you'll have set a breakpoint, of course, in it in your run method or in your on request receive probably. It will fire, and you'll get halted. You'll get a break at the breakpoint, and
feels like magic almost.
Debug. It's awesomely amazing.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's kind of the tip on how you do that.
Maybe this would be easier if we took a look.
Let's see. Yeah, let's do this and show a nice example of how this works.
Here we are in the app service, which just has a foreground code. The foreground app just has code to show us the package family name. That's all. Doesn't have a UI, that all the clever stuff is in the app service itself, the background task. But what it must have is in the package app manifest, it needs to declare that app service. It needs to have the entry point in the background task and an app service name like that. Then we go down here is the background task. And inside that, we've got a run method like normal, where we first of all get the service deferral from the args in case we want to terminate ourselves later on, and then we look at how we've been triggered, which is at this app service trigger, check that the name is correct, and then we hook up a request received event handler so that we can handle any incoming requests. This is the request received, where we process all the calls to our app service. It just gets passed a value set, which we're using a simple command string. So here's the calcsum option, where we can extract a couple of values from our value set, do our processing, which is just add them together, build another value set to return, and then call send response async. The message deferral is capable of doing async. This is where we use that service deferral to quit ourselves if we so wish. Don't have to do that. Okay, let's run the app service app, and so we can just get that package family name. Set that as the startup, so we're deploying it and running it. Here we go, there's the package family name. We've written it to the message dialog and also to the debug, so we can copy it from there. Now let's go off and look in our client where the code is to call the service. First of all, we're configuring an app service connection object with the package family name. So we can paste in that value that we just copied from the service. And we also set the correct app service name. And then we call appserviceconnection.openasync. Once we've got our connection, then we can start sending data to that service. So we build a value set, put our values into it, call send message async, and wait for the response. And when we get our response, we put it up on the screen. All right, let's run that. Here we are, put our two values into the input text box, call our service, and the response has come back from the app service. The app service is still running, so we can call it multiple times. Let's just call it again, put a new value in there, call it again, and we get the answer back again. So that's good. How do we debug our app service, though? Well, you need to go into the app that's hosting the service, go into the debug properties, set that do not launch, but debug my code when it starts. Set this as the startup project. And then we need to go in and set a breakpoint in our app service. So here we go. Set a breakpoint up here. And then we can run it in the debugger. It'll start, the debugger will start, but nothing will actually show. And then you need to run your client app, either directly like this or through another copy of Visual Studio. Make the call to the service, and now we've hit the breakpoint in the background task. And there you can do all the normal debugging stuff you do, step through, inspect values. And as you see here, we're stepping through the code and sending the response back to the client. So there you go. That's a very simple example of an app service. Let's take a look at a more interesting example. This is a synonym service. So again, same thing with the app that's hosting the service. We've just got some stuff to get the package family name in the foreground app. But of course, in the manifest, we've declared the app service. And this one is the synonyms app service. It's the background task is synonym service task, which is up here. This is the background task. You'll notice there's a bin key. I'll come back to that in a moment. In the run method, then we get triggered, and in the app service connection request receive, we receive our value set, and I'm calling this synonym API to actually do the processing. So this is a real kind of doing some real processing here. Synonym API has a method getSynonyms async, and what it does is it passes a password credential which contains a API key, and we are requesting using HTTP client JSON to this URI, which is a Azure Marketplace service, a cloud service from Azure. And we call getStringAsync to get something from that service. And we're using JSON.NET in order to deserialize the response into something that we can then extract the synonyms from. So how did I get this? This is the Microsoft Azure Marketplace, the Synonyms API, which is on trial right now. And you can use this and try it. There's a developer guide. This is how I figured out how to make a call to it using raw HTTP calls. So you can go in and you can sign up for this service and use it for free on trial. And this is how I figured out how to call it. So we get the response back from it. Now, in our client app, then we have the logic to make the call to our service. So here, same stuff, app service connection. Set the right name, put the right package family name on it for our app service. Then we open a connection and then we start sending it data to the service. So there's our value set with a command, which is get synonym. And then we are looking at the results. So run that. Let's check it out. And I'm going to put in here CTAC, get synonyms for CTAC. So let's make it a call up to Azure, the cloud service, and it's come back with the results CTAC, Seattle, Tacoma. Seattle Tacoma Airport is the different synonyms for that.
Pretty nice demo there, Andy. I think it makes a lot of sense. It's quite a tool in our toolbox, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of excitement chatting to people in Microsoft and seeing how these kind of app services are going to be able to be created and really build more and more of these to expand the capabilities that are available to first-party apps and also to third-party apps.
Now, with great power comes great responsibility.
Right.
We know there are things around app services we need to consider before you just dive in.
Yeah.
Kind of walk us through the thought process.
Yeah, so let's dig a bit deeper into some of these things you want to think about. What about, okay, the lifetime of this thing? You know, I've already said, obviously, it's activated on demand, and we've seen the process where your background task gets activated by this special app service trigger. How long will it, is it live, and how long can it stay there? So, well, first of all, the client may cause its app service connection, its app service to die just by if it disposes of the app service connection it got when it made the initial connection.
Okay.
That will cause the service to die. Or, as we saw earlier in this session, you could actually build into the protocol. You could say, a quit command or, you're done or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's up to you if you want to implement that in your protocol that you devise for your app service. And the other thing is if the client app, the invoking app, is suspended while this communication was going on and while the app service thing, the app services sponsored by that app will be terminated. Obviously you've got to have some logic in your invoking app, the client app, that if it gets activated again, presumably the next time it tries to access that app service, it will have to launch it again. So you need to make sure that you test for that scenario.
So I saw when we first ran it, we checked to see if there was success. That's important because there's more than just success we could get back.
Yep, that's right. So you might get resources not available if the device is running short of resources. You might get resource limits exceeded later on. Or if your logic assumes that on activation, assumes that the app service was still there, that might not be the case. So you might have to, simply enough, you just have to reinvoke it and get a new app service connection instance and pick up where you left off.
Yeah. App services, think web services for your apps, but only on the device.
Yep.
So there's a lot of other similarities to web services as well here. We have a protocol.
Yeah, these are very much modeled on web RESTful web services. This is what we were thinking of when we built this. So it's designed to be flexible and lightweight, and we've designed it to be, we're not going to kind of really demand a particular protocol. We've just given this nice, lightweight, message-based mechanism. Uh-huh. And then, it's kind of up to you what you build on top of this. Very simple request response message API. We've got this payload of these value sets, which are 100 kilobytes maximum. If you need to send more data than that, you could actually use get the shared storage manager and get a file token and send that over. All that kind of good stuff. So there's lots of ways of handling that one. But it's easy to use with multiple different payloads. So what you build to order actually for a client to talk to your service is pretty much up to you. So you just have to think in terms of the protocol. You're defining effectively an endpoint. And just like any RESTful web service, you'll say you have to publish in some way on a web page or some web portal or something. The protocol that a client needs to go through in order to successfully communicate with your app service. So you just kind of document it.
And like we talked about before, I have the ability to pass a payload to that background task. It has the ability to pass something back to me.
Sure.
Or not. Execute something on behalf.
Yep.
I might actually want something back, maybe a receipt or something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't have to wait for it to finish.
That's scenario specific, yeah. So yeah, it's whatever the function of that service is and how you've defined it.
Makes sense to me.
Sure. Yeah, so if you want a kind of one sentence, little summary of what they are. So we started with one. I'm going to give you another one. App services provides a way for applications to communicate with each other. I mean, it's a
and most
mechanism.
Specifically without invoking a UI.
Without invoking a UI, which is why it's so valuable and so powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's very extensible.
Okay.
Right. Now, you've seen there, the examples we've seen so far, we've got this lightweight message-based protocol for a client to talk to a service, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But, that's kind of verbose, if you like.
In terms of
it. Yeah, so wouldn't it be nice? It wouldn't be nice if we just had a nice, clean, high-level, strongly typed API to talk to our app service instead of all of this open an app service connection, send this message.
Oh, like a proxy, an encapsulated wrapper.
Just a nice, clean wrapper, yeah. And this is very much what we see people doing. So if you've got hopefully you've created the world's most popular app service, you will clearly want to provide an API to developers to make it even easier for them to use your app service. So you just define another wrapper, a facade around your service, and hide all that communications detail inside a client library, which you can then ship. Maybe probably a great way of doing that would be to build it as a package and ship it through NuGet.
So we're not talking about a feature of Windows 10. We're talking about a best practice if you create a background application, a background task that does some sort of servicing for another app. You could write the wrapper and deploy it out through NuGet so it's easy for them to consume it without having to know all these intimate details of your application.
You see this over and over. I mean, like with Azure or something like that. You know, you can be down in the weeds and doing raw protocol messages to talk to some service, or you can download from NuGet the such and such an SDK, and you get the high-level methods. Just the same kind
just
of idea.
Just makes sense. Yeah. I was just thinking, so I have my background task, and I'm waiting there to process something. What if somebody I don't want to process for starts calling me? Is there any way for me to limit the callers?
Yeah, okay, so yeah, can I restrict access? Well, that's up to you, really. Uh-huh. You know, so again, we got this very lightweight thing. It's the same idea as with RESTful web services. So there's going to be different techniques that you can use for validating it, particularly enterprises, of course, are going to be interested in this. So you can build your own caller validation mechanism on top of app services. One thing that you do get is...
Which would be like in the value set, I could pass a some sort of key or token?
You could exactly do that, yes. That's right. It could be a hash. It could be an X5. It could be an actually use X5 and 9 certificates, for example. You know,
oh, yeah, you could go to town.
I mean, one thing we do get for free, if you like, is the package family name of the caller is automatically passed in the args to on every message to the service anyway.
So you can't anonymously call.
No, you can't. So the simplest kind of mechanism would be, particularly for an enterprise, just to whitelist all the callers. And
yeah.
You just say, oh, is this in my list? Oh, yeah, I know about you.
Probably makes the most sense.
Yeah, nice and simple.
If you can't, if it's not, that's if it's an enterprise application.
Sure.
If it's a generic application where you're just providing a service to anybody who wants to call, creating a whitelist could be actually very difficult. Because
that's not going to be practical. No, that's right. So they might have to build other mechanisms on that. But there's plenty of ways of... It's interesting.
What about if I call out to a service? I could call to that task, and the task is actually thinking of all the logic that we used in April, right? We've actually upgraded that.
Okay, yeah. So, you have to think about versioning. So, and this, again, is something with REST services. You have to think of what you are doing is defining a known protocol for talking to your app service. If you break that...
Yeah.
Or you add new features and enhance it and expand it, sure, then you are defining a new endpoint for your clients, and you need to support the older one for at least a period, until you withdraw it. So just the same as any, if you're creating any kind of programming library, an API,
any service,
a contract, talking about the UAP thing, any service, you have a, you need to guarantee to your users that you're going to continue to support them.
But it doesn't matter what you come up with.
No.
Because we already talked about it, you're going to wrap it anyway. The user doesn't need to know all the trickiness that you put into it. I don't mean the user, but the developer doesn't need to know.
No, that's right.
Because all you're going to do is return a not available or version not available, something like
that. That's right, yeah. It could give warning. Anyway, there's plenty of ways of doing that.
Right.
And if you are shipping a client SDK through NuGet or something, you just put a new V1 and a V2 and a V3 kind of API in there to allow client developers to take advantage of new features and that you're building into your service.
I like this.
It's nice.
I think it would make sense for... Show me a demo. I want to see it actually work.
Very quickly, So this is not going to be a complicated one. Just to show you how you can do a nice little easy, high-level, strongly typed client API around your app service client-side.
Beautiful.
So here we are back in the client app. And all this code here, this kind of verbose, quite lengthy code... This is kind of too much code to write every time you want to call an app service in the client app. So we can really tidy this up quite a lot. So I have actually already done that. So I'm going to add to my solution an existing project, which is a synonym service client library. And inside it, it's got a couple of classes. The main one is the synonym service client, which has in it all of that same code, all that plumbing code that you need to trigger an app service and to communicate with it. So it's all hidden away in here because it's all very repetitive stuff. And you know, a client app shouldn't have to write all this. So it's all encapsulated in this one nice method, an async method called getSynonymsAsync. So to use this client library, I'm just going to add a reference in the client app to this client library. So that's now referenced, and then we can go and really tidy up this code in the client app. So first of all, I don't need to directly handle the app service connection because that's handled for me by the library. Again, this code here, all that verbose code goes, and instead I've got down here already commented out this code, which is instead uses my client library. So the beauty of it is all you have to do is new up an instance of the synonym service client. And then we can just use it and call it getSynonymsAsync method like this. In fact, most of the code you can see here is just about presenting the response to, through a message dialog. And this client library would be very nice. We'll run it now. Would be a very nice package, maybe as a NuGet package or just as a reusable library. So let's put in synonyms for JLO. Make call to the cloud service and it comes back with a response that's suitable as Jennifer Lopez. So it works just the same.
Well, it's as easy as we thought. That really makes it simple for anybody consuming the service, right? You guide them through it so they can't get it wrong. I like it.
Yep. So there we go. So that was a run through what we have with app services. We looked at what it is, ran through quickly the bare bones of a client and the server, and you can see it's not particularly complicated. We looked at how you might want to debug this, mm-hmm. how you find the package family name and how you set breakpoint and things. And then we dug a little bit just into some of the other aspects that you might want to think about in using these, the lifetime, how you might want to wrap it in a nice clean client SDK, a little bit about controlling access and versioning. It's cool stuff. It really is, yep.
This is the developer's guide to Windows 10 preview. So we're seeing a lot of the neat stuff coming our way. Things that you can play with right now, already start to think, what can you do in your application to take advantage of some of these cool features? Go play with app services, see how cool it is.
Yeah.
Start thinking about maybe some architectural decisions that you get to make and take advantage of as well. Then come back, watch another module with us later.